So I want to introduce one final topic in terms of our discussion of metastatic breast cancer, and that's the much more common situation than Antonio's situation of the patient who does not have life-threatening disease, is minimally symptomatic or asymptomatic. Hi, how do you think through this situation?
Well, I think there's always a lot of modifiers, but I think today most of the patients we see who have relapse aren't really that symptomatic. I think it's a lot different today than it was years ago where maybe you didn't follow patients as closely. So I feel today, most of the time, I would favor using a drug like capecitabine for many of these patients. I think it gets back to quality of life issues, and that starting an oral agent in perhaps a lower dose and working your way up for most patients is probably going to ease them into their diagnosis and dealing with it and give them a little bit better chance to deal with the issue of metastatic breast cancer than jumping into intravenous therapy and another episode of hair loss very quickly. So I kind of, for most patients, favor a single agent approach. And I think we have good data. It probably has no impact on the long-term survival. And I think it certainly can improve their quality of life.
So, doctor, I have two teenage kids. I've been on the internet. I've been reading, will I be able to stay on treatment longer if you add in bevacizumab to the capecitabine? I have an ER-positive tumor.
Yeah, so Dr. Sledge's data might suggest if I look at all the phase 2 data of capecitabine alone, and I look at the trial he showed, the 100-patient trial where the ER-PR-positive patients did a little bit better, I would say, yeah, there might be a little bit better, but it might be a better strategy to start you on the pills and see what happens. And we can always use this drug later on if your disease progresses. But I think a lot is patient dependent. If a patient knows a lot about this, you occasionally get people in, they're very sophisticated and wanted to try this and it was available, it would be reasonable. But my strategy would still be to push for the single agent.
Cliff, what's your take on the Bev-Cape discussion?
Well, we don't have high-level randomized data that can answer the question, and I suppose we'll need it someday unless we buy the earlier argument that the chemotherapy doesn't matter in the setting of the antibody, which might turn out to be true. I have to say we have extensive experience with the combination because we've been running a phase 1 and now 2 study of Bev and CAPE using the unconventional 7-on-7 off schedule. And it looks to me, quite frankly, like it's not so different from everything else we do in the first line setting. It's about toxicity.
You know, actually in this breast cancer update here that we gave you, I interviewed Larry Norton, and he was saying that we've looked at CAPE Bev with the wrong schedule and dose of CAPE. I guess, you know, obviously he's a big believer in that, but feels like we need to maximize the schedule and dose of CAPE in order to be able to comment on CAPE Bev.
Well, I agree, and that's what we've done. Tiffany Train has been the PI for that study. And it is interesting. I mean, it's not randomized, so I wouldn't make too much of it. But it's one of those places where research and practice are getting a little fuzzy, because part of the reason we did it was that we had animal models that clearly predicted 8 days of therapy was superior to longer durations because, in fact, the animals lived longer that way. But in practice, clinicians have been dropping parts of the second week of therapy anyway when using the package insert dose. So you sort of had this practical force on one side and you had some science on the other. And we ended up selecting 7 days as a practical compromise.
Edith, final comment. What was your take about this ER-positive, ER-negative thing that George presented in terms of CAPE-BEV? And you think that's real or some kind of subset thing?
Well, it was a modest-sized study. And I think the data were disappointing overall for the combination. And taken in the context of the second-line study led by Kathy Miller, I will be a little cautious. So I'm, on the other hand, very excited that there was a large cohort of patients in Ribbon 1 who participated in this type of randomization as first-line. So we will have some definite data. To add to that, we at NCCTG actually did a study of first-line, for first-line patients, docetaxel in combination with capecitabine and bevacizumab, which was parallel to the study that George did with capecitabine and bevacizumab. But it was fascinating to look at the data from the two different phase 2 studies, as by adding docetaxel, we could really improve the response rate by about 20-30%, and we could improve the progression-free survival by about 3 months compared to what they accomplished without the taxane in that study. So it was interesting, by adding a second chemotherapy drug in a different study, we could improve response rate and progression-free survival, but at the cost of toxicity in the form of myelosuppression.
So what's your usual approach to these patients with non-life-threatening, maybe they've been on hormones, et cetera, let's say no prior taxane?
Yeah, we use capecitabine as single agent at this time. I would not use it with bevacizumab until we get more data.
And then they progress second line?
We have many trials.
They're not eligible for any trials.
You know, really, exabepilone is an option for a patient such as this one.
Bev?
Beth, we participated in the Ribbon 1 study, and I believe that progression-free survival is an important endpoint for patients. So a possibility here will go to a weekly paclitaxel, weekly nab-paclitaxel in combination with Beth.